You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Without further ado, it's my honour and privilege to hand you over to our panel. This is Criminal Injustice 101. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rachel, and thank you everybody for turning up. It's really exciting for us to see so many of you here today. So I'm your host for the next hour. My name is Shona Minson, and I've worked, thank you very much, nice to have a few friends and family around. I have worked in the justice system for 3 decades, first as a barrister, and then for the last years, really accidentally, as a criminologist at the University of Oxford. And the reason I'm here today is because I'm really troubled by injustice. And I wonder why you've come. What is it about this panel that's intrigued you? So I'm just going to introduce our panelists. But firstly, just want to say that the reason we've brought this panel to Greenbelt is because the criminalisation of activities and people impacts every part of society. So poverty, exclusion, healthcare, education, and every form of othering linked directly to the criminal justice system. We are all affected by it, whether we recognise that or not. And yet it's really poorly understood by most of us unless we have direct experience of it. So this panel is going to try in now 58 minutes to demystify, to maybe debunk some myths, to disrupt your thinking. And also they're going to tell us what dreams they have for criminal justice in this country. So I'd like to introduce the panel members. We're really fortunate to have them all here today. They have a wealth of experience and wisdom to contribute to this discussion. So first of all, on my far left is, oh, and there's nothing in the placement. Nobody wanted to be on the far right this morning. But somebody had to be, so thank you, Pia. So
I'm taking one for the team.
Yeah, thank you. Junior Smart is a youth leader, trainer, and violence intervention specialist who has developed the award-winning SOS Gangs Project, which is London's largest ex-offender gangs exit program. Since its inception, it has worked with thousands of young people to safely exit group offending and violence, and he's been awarded an OBE in recognition of his work in tackling youth violence. Absolutely. Now, I don't know how he fits it all in, but he works for St Giles Trust, a post he's held since 2006 when he was released from prison, where he had served a 10-year sentence for a drug and gang-related offence. Additionally, although he dropped out of education at 14, he's currently got 2 degrees, an honorary doctorate, and is finishing off his PhD. So sitting on my right is Lady Unchained. She is a poet and author, a performer, award-winning broadcaster, mentor, artist manager, TEDx speaker, curator, and advocate. Her mission is to prove there is life after prison. She is the founder and creative director of Unchained Poetry and mentors artists with lived experience of the criminal justice system. She runs poetry workshops in prisons and in community-based women's centres to help people with lived experience of the criminal justice system find their creative voice. She's won many awards, including a Gold Award for Best Host Speech from the Audio Production Awards, and continues to challenge the ex-offender label through creativity. So we're so glad to have her. Now, not representing the far right, we have Pia Sinha, who has, again, a long history in the prison service and in criminal justice. She joined the prison service as a psychologist in 1999, moved up to becoming a deputy governor at a women's prison in Surrey, took on her first prisoner governor role in 2013, and then stepped into some pretty dire governor situations after that. In 2020, she became acting deputy director of the probation reform program within HMPPS before becoming director of women in November 2021. And while she was in that role, her vision was to see safe, compassionate, and individualized care for women within the prison system. But then in 2023, she stepped out of that and became the chief exec officer of the Prison Reform Trust. If you would like to know more about Pia, I can really recommend her little Desert Island Discs program, which is very good. So thank you, Pia. And the Right Reverend Rachel Treweek. Rachel, who I've known for about three decades as well, is the Bishop of Gloucester and made history by becoming the first female bishop in the House of Lords, which definitely deserves some applause. Now, originally, Rachel trained as a speech and language therapist and worked in the NHS in paediatric therapy. She's the Anglican Bishop for Prisons in England and Wales and speaks in the House of Lords on all issues related to crime and imprisonment. With a keen interest in gender justice, and a passion for vulnerable girls and women, Rachel has launched a campaign fighting for women's justice, which aims to change the women's justice system and raise awareness of the work that takes place through Women's Centre across the country. Thank you, Rachel. So that's who you're hearing from. Now, the way that we're going to do this is the first 20 minutes, I hope, keeping this strictly timed, are going to be about some of the practicalities of the criminal justice system. And then the second half is going to be more about some of the concepts and some of the future vision that we might have. We may or may not have time for Q&A at the end, but I think probably it's worth spending the time listening to these guys, and then you can chase us for questions afterwards. That's probably the way it'll go. So I'm going to begin with Junior. So criminals are bad people who do bad things and are punished. Is that right? Or am I missing something?
I think when we think about prison, when we think about the sort of people that end up in those sort of places, firstly, we've got to say, right, absolutely, you know, we have to have consequences in our society. What happens in a football match, for example, if there's no referees or there's no rules? People be fly kicking each other, and it's all about having the protection from, you know, victims. But we have to ask ourselves, like, what we've come up with in this kind of society is that prisons become the end all for all sorts of issues. People that have experienced trauma, people that have experienced domestic violence, people with addictions, people with really big issues. And are we saying then that prison is the right solution? But would we as a society be happy then if someone who has addictions, that, yep, there's the answer for you. Someone who's experienced trauma, let's put you in prison, which is a trauma-filled, oppressive environment. And then we have to say, right, actually, that person who's got a criminal record and having spent that time away, are they going to be in a better position when they then come out of custody? I disagree with those sentiments. I think prison works in terms of protecting the public. You know, it absolutely, some people are absolutely hell-bent on breaking the law and causing harm to others. But is it the solution for many, many, many of the other issues that we have in our society? Is it the dumping grounds for people where other supportive measures could be used? I simply just don't believe in that as a response. And I certainly think that there are better alternatives, and these are alternatives that are known. Unfortunately, the narrative has become punitive, but there are better alternatives for people that are suffering in our society. And that is the kind of world that I think many of us want to live in, a supportive one, than not necessarily punitive, but only punitive when it's necessary.
Thanks. Junior. So, Pia, what can you tell me about people who are currently in our prisons in the UK? Let's specify England and Wales, because Scotland's a different case.
So, completely backing what Junior's just said, I started my career, as you said, Shona, as a psychologist in 1999. And it was a women's prison in Holloway. And after a certain period of time of working there, I could almost finish my clients' sentences and finish their stories, because they were shockingly similar in terms of who came to prison, what their stories were, why they ended up in there. And I did that for 5 years, and then I worked in a male prison, thinking that the stories would be different, because the reasons why women come to prison might be completely different for why men come to prison, and they were alarmingly similar.
Can you elaborate on what those reasons would be?
So, My experience, so I'll speak first about the experience of being a practitioner, and then I've got the stats, which actually kind of back it up, which is a relief, really. So every single person that I spoke to, and bear in mind, I did have a particular cohort because these were people that had mental health problems who were coming to see me as a therapist. So, but majority of the women and men I saw had a history of early childhood deprivation and abuse. Majority of them had been care experienced. Many of whom had to deal with their trauma at a very early age in their early teens by resorting to drug use and alcohol use as a way of coping, had very difficult and problematic experiences in education, many of whom had to be excluded, and spent their life drifting and being failed by every institution that was there to support them at an early point. So failed by public health, failed by social services, failed by education, failed by health. And my really heartfelt experience was as the individuals who drifted into custody had drifted there as a place of last chance saloon, having been failed by every other institution that should have been there early on to help them. And when I joined the Prison Reform Trust, and the Prison Reform Trust is a charity that amongst many things looks at the research behind it. So these are not just anecdotal things, these are not just about experiences of people, but actually backed by data and evidence. And what some of our data says is that 31% of women and 24% of men who drift into custody were taken into care as children. 50% of women and 40% of men experienced and observed violence at home as children. 59% regularly truanted from school. 47% had no qualifications. 54% had children themselves under the age of 18. And 46%, which is the really alarming figure, had attempted suicide before they came into custody. So this is the kind of picture that I had experienced as a practitioner, but it's been backed by the data.
Okay. Thank you, Pia. So Rachel, most people are punished in the community and not in prison. We tend to hear a lot about prisons, but actually most people who go through the criminal justice system end up with some form of community punishment. What should we understand about punishment in the community?
Thank you. I think there are two key words that you just mentioned there. One is community and one is punishment. I suspect that if we went out onto the streets and asked people about what prison is for, people would straight away say punishment. And we are absolutely obsessed with punishment and vengeance. We could talk about that for a long time. And the other is community. So the common narrative in government and out there is that we want to make our streets safer. And we make our streets safer by sending more people to prison and for longer. We have the highest prison population in Western Europe. That is simply not true. If people know that the percentage of reoffending, I think something like roughly 80% of people reoffend within a year of being released from prison. I want to change the narrative and say that if not about making our streets safer, but make our communities stronger, then that is also about safe streets. Then this is about the long term, about what makes communities strong. Because this is about victims and offenders. And many people, as you've just said, are both. Because we have to be saying, actually, how do we look at this holistically? Now, in the community where people want to punish people and there are consequences, you say, for all our actions, in the community, we can live with those and deal with those consequences and keep people in the community. So all the options of community sentencing around tagging people, around dealing with addictions, about putting curfew on people, so we can still deprive people of liberties, which I would say is where the punishment comes in, but keep people in the community where we're not removing people often from relationships, from homes, from families, perhaps from employment, separating from children. Because in the long run, we are just perpetuating exactly what Piers has been talking about and Junior's been talking about. We need to be saying what's right for the victims of those crimes. People want to say, we want to know that this will never happen to anyone else again. Well, just putting someone in prison for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years isn't going to suddenly change them, send them back to the community and make that community stronger. We are just perpetuating in a short-term way that view we want to punish people, and actually we are not holistically changing things in the long run. So I want to see more community sentencing, more addressing things in the community, more women's centres where people are able to address those traumas, those things that have gone wrong, and face up to the consequences of their choices and say transformation is possible.
Okay, thank you. So that's an... That's an interesting distinction, really, to be making, and thinking about what this punishment that takes place in communities, because it is often we think that the circumstances people should experience should be punishing, but actually you're saying the punishment is the deprivation of liberty, which can also happen if somebody's on a curfew or on a tag or has to do work or whatever it happens to be, or even addressing it. I say even addressing offending behaviour, which is actually a really hard thing to do. That is hard work to expect someone to do. Brenda, can I ask you, just moving to the other end of the sort of system, is there support for people to reintegrate when they come out of prison?
So I would say yes. However, to find that support is incredibly hard. If you don't know where it is, there's not a lot of guide or signs to get there. The best statement I heard about support after prison was from Carl Cuttermore, an author who has also been to prison himself. And he said, it's like they take you out of jail and then they say, basically, all the help you need is across the river, but they don't give you a boat and you don't know how to swim. So how do you get the help? You know, I've gone from, you know, never being in the criminal justice system and then going into the criminal justice system at 21 years old, having all my qualifications and everything, and then got into prison and there was nothing for me to do in prison because they were like, oh, you've been to school. Yeah, I didn't plan to come to prison. I was just living my life. So after I got out, all of those qualifications were now irrelevant. So I had to start from scratch. Does that make sense? So ideally, what it's saying is that, yes, there's support, but you have to have the right person or the right support already in place. Otherwise, you won't find it.
Okay. This is all quite bleak, I accept that. And hopefully we will get to hope at the end, but I think it's really important that we address the realities of this. So I'm going to ask each of you just to give me in a sentence or two, what for you are the greatest injustices in our criminal justice system at the moment? Who would like to start? Who's got an answer ready? Pia?
Well, I think that a lot of it has been said by all of us. And I think the greatest injustices are the fact that people who could have been helped upstream and those opportunities were missed and wasted have then sometimes through no fault of their own found themselves entrapped in a system. And just like Brenda was saying, that they're stuck. They're stuck and they can't find their way across the river. And what feels the most unjust is that these are the individuals that we as a society need to care the most about, and they end up being the individuals that we tend to just punish our way out of and forget about by putting them behind walls. And I think that is just that is criminal.
Do you know what as well? I think before prison, I had never really had associations with certain friends or certain people. Like, I would see people, you know, that if a woman is a prostitute, I would instantly know she's a prostitute. And being young, I would say, well, you know, she should get a job. You know, that was my understanding. I got thrown in prison, Holloway, actually, 21 years old, and was surrounded by all these women who at first I was afraid of, because I was like, it's Holloway, they all must be murderers, you know, and I didn't see myself as a criminal. So I was like, this is a war. However, as the conversation started to happen between myself and these women, I realized very quickly that there was, like we were saying, like there was so many there were so many opportunities for that person to get the support that they needed, but instead they didn't get it. So they end up in prison and then surrounded by other women who are all going through the same trauma, and maybe for the first time have actually connected with somebody that understands them. And then it becomes addictive, because in the community, you won't find that person. So you become so used to, oh, let me go back to jail, because actually that's where I feel safe and that's where I feel seen. And I think for me, that is the issue. As a society, if we have people that are saying that prison is safer for them, we are doing something really wrong in our communities, building that strong community. We don't have it. And that's why people keep going back. Yeah.
I think following on from all of that, which I absolutely agree with that injustice, I find it really unjust that we have ripped out relationship from our criminal justice system. So what happens is people end up in the criminal justice system because of broken relationship, having not had those strong relationships. We then have a system which doesn't look at, we separate people. So we separate people, and often separation has been the big issue from a very young age. And then when people are in prison, we don't focus on that healthy relationship. And when people come out of prison, often the relationships that have been created are not those healthy relationships, and we are not looking at the bigger picture of relationship within those communities. So I long for a criminal justice system which puts relationship back at its heart.
For me, one of the biggest injustices is that society isn't at the stage where it will move past the label. So, you know, one of my, like, although I was inside for a lot of time, and I know you read out all of the stuff that I've done, would you believe that I've still struggled to get things like car insurance? I know it sounds absolutely amazing, it sounds absolutely mental, but I was calling them up. I was saying to them, I was calling up insurance company after insurance company. I said, right, no, you know, with my sentence, unfortunately, it will never be spent. I got 12 years knocked down to 10, and the amount of doors I had closed in my face, and I had, in the last time, I didn't ever want to pull rank, but I sort of said, okay, to the last, because it was really the last chance, and I needed the car insured. I said, look, have a Google, you'll see I've got an OBE. She said, right, hang on a second, I'll speak to my manager. I'm not joking, it's 100% true. She said, I'll speak to my manager, I'll call you back. As I put the phone down, literally 5 minutes later, she said, yeah, we'll insure you. Right? Now this is the reality of it. I've been out of custody, like, coming close to 18 years. Like, you can Google it and it'll be like alarm bells ringing. Like, you'll see all the stuff that I've done. But imagine somebody who's come out of custody that has none of that. Yeah. Now, they've got choices. And I know this for a fact because I mentor young people to set up their own businesses, to get employment and so on and so forth. There's a girl that I'm working with right now that wanted to go to college, self-funded place. She made the mistake of ticking the box that said she had a criminal record, and she was shunned. She was shunned from a course that she was going to have to pay for. I ended up sending an email to the university and the dean of that, and I said, look, it says in your banner, equal opportunity, second chances. I said, just give her a chance. Let her sit the interview. She said, you can't, you know, what happens if she breaks the law if she's on campus? I said, no, just give her a chance. The girl sat the interview and passed, and she went on to do the course. But this is the problem that we have. Rehabilitation is treated as an afterthought. We're very good in society at labelling people, at creating divisions, at seeing people different to us, or seeing where people have made faults instead of seeing their potential. And I will never forget this conversation with the lady on the phone, because she was saying to me, sometimes you just need people to stand in your corner. But until we're on a level playing field, what that does is it makes the appeal to committing crime even more likely. Yeah. If somebody isn't given a second chance, isn't given a home or given an employment or given an access to a bank account, what are they supposed to do? And then that leads back to calling up old friends, calling up old associations. What can you do? Can you help me? Of course, we'll put a roof over your head. You just need to do that, 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 and that. And then the cycle starts again. And that is one of the biggest injustices of our society.
So it would seem that our system isn't really working socially. Is it working economically, Pia? Can we at least say, well, this makes financial sense, and that is why successive governments keep pressing ahead with the same kind of system?
Any guesses for what I'm going to say here? Well, and this is the biggest tragedy of it all, and it is the injustice. So someone goes into the criminal justice system, they may have had one or two anchors. They may have had a relationship with their family. They may have had a job. They may have had a home. They come into prison and all those anchors disappear. We then spit them out at the other end without those anchors. And as Junior so clearly described, we expect them to have a much, much higher standard of what they need to do. But this then starts the cycle. It costs us around £50,000 a year per person to go through prison. And if you want to think about it, not from an emotional point of view, not from a sentimental point of view, but from a pragmatic, economical point of view, it makes no sense either, because the money that you're spending as taxpayers is about doing as much good as a chocolate teapot. So I think that we need to start informing the debate about the various layers of failure in this system, the various points of failure in this system. And the victims' lobby is a powerful one, and so it should be. And what people who have been victims of crime say, or people who know people who've been victims of crime say, is that the one thing that they do want from someone getting a custodial sentence is that they learn from this and they don't come back and make another victim. Now, if that is your ultimate guide, if that is your framework, then you go through prison, you're spending £50,000 per person per year in prison, and the very thing that actually what people want to happen does not happen at the end. It's an absolute waste of time. So economically, it makes no sense.
Okay. Feel free to applaud. I mean, absolutely. So, Rachel, coming to some of the bigger ideas, because obviously, as you would imagine, the five of us could continue on that theme for a very, very long time. We have days and days of material we could provide you with, but we're going to move on to some of the bigger ideas around this. Language is really important, and you know, I've stopped in my own work. I tend to not talk about a criminal justice system anymore. I talk about a criminal legal system because I don't believe there is justice in it. But that's my view. What's yours, Rachel? Is it just? And as a Christian, is there a place for this system? Place in this system for ideas and practices of mercy, forgiveness, restoration? And I mean, this is another day's seminar, really. Yeah. But how does that sit with justice? Yeah. And how does it sit as we see things now?
Thank you. And one of the things I'm so delighted that we are having this discussion here at Greenbelt, where justice and injustice is spoken about so much, but I don't think criminal justice is that absolutely at the heart, I believe, as a Christian, at the heart of who God is a God whose love is beyond our imaginations and whose mercy and forgiveness is beyond our imaginations. And I find it so, it makes me angry, I'll say that as a bishop, people beat a path to my door about all sorts of subjects, which we could all talk about here, I'm sure, endlessly. Do you know, I could count the finger of one hand, the people who beat a path to my door about justice to do with what we're talking about, criminal injustice. And for me, if we really believe in holding together the mercy and the love that God has shown us, then why are we all not using our voices and using who we are to demand change? And for me, at the heart of the gospel is that God of reconciliation. And if I look at what Christ has done for us, that Christ's death and resurrection is all about reconciliation. If we say we believe in a God who is making all things new, a God of transformation, a God of restoration, then what are we doing if we are not speaking into this sphere. And that's what motivates me. And we cannot separate it from all the things about poverty, about food issues, about all the things we talk about, unless we are saying that criminal injustice, as you said at the beginning, is actually reflected across all of this. And for me, the heart of the gospel is right there.
And would it be right to suggest that it is not currently in our system, built into our system?
Absolutely, yes. And we sit this in a little box because our prisons are not seen on the whole. So I think people think, oh, we sent someone to prison, dealt with, let's forget about it now, rather than having that long-term vision and always trying to fix things. And again, as a Christian, we have a long-term vision of the kingdom of God coming on earth as in heaven, the signs of the kingdom of God now. This is a long-term vision, and we have to be joining in with that now.
Yeah, thank you, Junior. So there's a criminologist called Shad Maruna who has done a lot of work about desistance and how people stop offending. And again, there's lots we could say about that. One of the things that I think really resonates with what you said, Rachel, is he talks about redemption narratives and how we all in our lives need redemption narratives. When we have stuffed up in whatever way, we need to be able to see a story of ourselves that allows for redemption, that brings us to a different place. And the people that are punished in our system are no different. And yet there is a question around whether we allow those people to have redemption narratives. Sort of on that, can I ask you, I realized I was using not your proper name, which is of course Lady Unchained. Can I ask you, Lady Unchained? Now for you, I've heard you speaking and saying that for you, prison gave you hope and a different future. But what did you mean when you said that?
Okay, so prison didn't give me hope. Prison forced me to find myself. And in finding myself and my faith, I found hope. There is no hope in prison. And I'll just say that as it is, because prison is a dark, dark place. Now, while I was there, of course, I picked up a pen. I refound my faith with God. I had had like a really love-hate relationship during the bail time. Like, God, like, what happened to that gospel time? I was in the choir, you know, what's going on? He weren't listening. And so when I got to jail, I wanted nothing to do with God at all. So I avoided all the pastors, everybody, I'm so sorry. I avoided them. I didn't even want them to talk to me because I've felt like they were a messenger of God coming to talk to me, and I didn't want nothing to do with him. So what I did is I picked up a pen, and that pen is really what saved me. It's what helped me find myself. At the time, I didn't realize I was writing poetry. It was literally just finding a way to get through those emotions, because in jail, it could be just over soap powder or like, you know, just lining up, and all of a sudden you're in some kind of situation and you're like, how did we get here? It was just soap powder. But actually, I would go into my cell and I would write. You know, I saw a lot of racist officers. You know, I nearly got deported back to Africa, even though I've got a British passport, you know. And so I saw a lot of things that could have actually turned me into a more angrier person. But thank God for my faith and the pen, because it gave me that faith, it gave me that hope. But then what it also did was make me see prison in a different light, because before that moment, I saw prison as you do the crime, you do the time. Like, that's what they teach us, you know, don't go to jail, you know, don't be a criminal. But then I ended up in a situation and realized that I was 21 years old meeting 16-year-old girls, 17-year-old girls, and every story was the same. It was either there's a man involved or something's happened at home, you know, you've been abused, or, you know, there's always a story. And to hear that in prison, I think for me, that's what gave me hope, because I was like, I can't let anybody else come here. We need to fix this. Something has to happen. And if I have to be that voice, then I will be, because I certainly calculated God's message then was that I needed to go into prison to really see what was going on behind those walls that we walk past and pretend that they don't exist. Because if there's a wall, you can't see all the damage that they're recreating and re-traumatizing behind that wall. Because guess what? Prisoners are not heard and seen. But I left and I came out and I said I would always speak about it, because until somebody sees somebody like themselves that has been to jail, that's now, you know, you read out our bios and even I was like, oh God, I really have done all that stuff. You know, because before, yeah, before I was the ex-offender poet, and that's just how people introduced me to on stage. Now we've got all of those, and I know for when I go into prisons and I talk to people and I work with people, they're like, what? You've done all of that? Are you, you're like me. And I always say, for me, the mic is not for me. It's for the person coming after me, the person that's going to walk through that gate and be like, oh my God, what do I do? I want them to know that the mic is ready for you. Tell your story and let's get that message created so that more people can pick up that mic or that pen and that faith and save lives.
So I'd like to ask each of you to answer this question, which is, in this rather bleak picture that we have at the moment of our system, where do you see space for us to hold hope? We'll go in the same order. Pia, are you ready to answer that?
Yeah, and I was reflecting on this, Shona, and as a practitioner, it's really hard to give yourself legitimacy, especially when you've been in that system that has been so painful and so hopeless and damaging. And I think that there are practitioners in this room. There's some prison chaplains. There's a colleague here who used to work in prisons. And I feel that in order to survive prisons, you yourself as a person going in there, whether it's a member of staff, a psychologist, governor, whatever, you have to get your suit of armor on, so you can deal with, and then after a while you stop seeing the pain, because that's the only way to survive it as someone going in and out of it. But I think that what happens in terms of your question about what gives you hope is that you've got to think about the small wins. Every day, the small things that you're doing that's chipping away at the pain, at the hopelessness, at the despair, being the one person that's bringing some light into this really dark and painful place. You have to reflect on it. You have to amplify it in your own mind, because that's what gives you your moral compass. That's what sustains you in doing what you're doing. Because in prisons, when you speak to people who have been prison experience, and I don't know whether that's the experience of the two of you, us on the panel here, but there's almost eventually one member of staff that did the right thing, one member of staff who said the right thing, one member of staff that did what they said they were going to do. And that can have a very important triggering effect for that individual who is feeling hopeful and hopeless, rather. Mm-hmm. And I think so, for me, it's about not losing sight of the fact that those small things do make a difference, and that you don't give up on the fact that those small things make a difference.
I absolutely love that, because in every jail I had that one officer that was the one that would help and actually get things done. I think I'm going to have to say this, because we are at a festival, and when I got to jail, like when I finally got to like out of the foreign national prison, I met an amazing woman. So 2009, I went to prison. Being a vegan wasn't a big thing then. I'd never met a vegan in my life. And then I got to jail, and believe it or not, that's where I met my first vegan. And I said, well, why are you here? And she said, well, I was trying to save the animals. So I was protesting. Now you've got to think, like, really and truly, we are all one step away from a prison sentence. And if that's the case, then how do we expect all of us to get through it? Because as we're here talking about it, everybody can talk about the trauma and the triggers and everything. After jail, there's no hope, because you're re-traumatized in jail. So think about if you was that person that, God forbid, you lost your job, your benefits didn't come through, or, you know, you lost your mom, or you lost a loved one and you went into depression, and the only people around you were also promoting drugs, alcohol, you know, not thinking about things. You end up in prison and you are now in this dark place thinking, hold on, I was already in a dark place, so how could I be in a darker place? Us as a society need to figure out how we, again, the labels, break that label, because any one of us could be an ex-offender. Any one of us could be, you know, an inmate. And if we don't have hope and faith to make sure that all the people in prison are being looked after, supported and advised and, you know, getting the needs that they, that their needs met, then we are not going to have hope. And that means that there is going to be, what is it, 2026, I think they estimated 17,000 more people in prison. How could you estimate that? That means they are planning for all of us to one day commit a crime and go into that place. So we need to create more faith, more support, but also those labels need to be broken, because once you are labeled an ex-offender, and it took me a long time to actually get to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm not an ex-offender anymore, I'm a poet and I'm a facilitator. But ideally, that label for a lot of young people is something that they go, well, I'm an ex-offender, and that's all I would ever be, because the media and the news says that prison is fun, 3 meals a day and gym. I'll tell you what, it was not fun for me. So let's create safer, hopeful places where people can actually see themselves in other people and actually see, actually, that could be me, and I need to know how I would get through that.
Hope, I guess in lots of different little ways. I think, again, you've touched on relationship, those really important relationships. Yeah, a real shout out for prison chaplains, for prison officers, probation officers, all those people who do try and build those strong relationships and live it well.
Actually, if we have any in the room at the moment, can we just give a cheer for it? I know we've got some here, and they're doing such a hard job.
Real shout out. I think as well, I want to say this gives me hope. You know, when I hear people's stories of those who've got lived experience, and also people who are passionate about it, it gives me hope. Pierre and I are part of some larger discussions going on in Westminster. That gives me hope where people do want to see change. I see hope in James Timpson, Lord Timpson, being our prisons minister. We need... If you're someone who prays, we need to pray for him, not to get bogged down in the system. So I think you have to hold on to hope, but it is in those 1 degree shifts. If we're looking for the whole system change all the time, we will feel overwhelmed and we will just feel this is too bleak. If we look at all those 1 degree shifts that begin to make a change, so this gives me hope, this gives me hope, and we've all got to say, what's the one thing I could do differently that could begin to change things?
Junior, can I ask you, maybe answer that question, but or answer this one instead, which is, why should all of these people here actually care about what's happening in the system at the moment?
I think you should all care because in my experience, the father is a fantastic leveler. He doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care what your background is. He doesn't care about your circumstances. He doesn't care whether you're a person who is on one side of the law or the other. He doesn't care whether you're a person committing crimes against each other or the state even committing crimes against its citizens. We're all on the same playing field. And I think that hope matters to us all, because hope is way past possible. When I've gone into some of the prisons where people are doing big, long sentences, double figures for life and so on and so forth, when you talked about Shad Maruna's theory of desistance, the first thing I do is I say, right, are we flooding them with success models? Well, no, where are the success models? There's loads of them. You think I'm the only one? Do you think this lady is the only one? There are thousands. I knew loads of people that came through, that have come through the system and have made radical changes and are using their voice. One of the biggest things for me was this resensitivity around life, and understanding the value of life and how important it is, and how vital it was that I used my experiences to and my platform to help other people. I put it to each and every one of you, use your voice, use your platform, speak up for the injustices that you do not feel is right, and always, always reach behind you for anyone that needs your support, because we need doors opened across the board, and people need to know that is possible.
Wow. So the theme of the festival is Dream On. And just to end, I'd like to hear what kind of justice system you would dream of. What would it look like, briefly? Can you suggest perhaps a guiding principle that we should be holding on to as we think about this? And who should we be listening to get our course right if we really want to do something differently? Lady on Chained, can I come to you first?
I was like trying to make a massive list in my head and I realised we were running out of time. I mean, for me, going to prison was probably the darkest part of my life. Like, I never experienced anything like that, you know, and I found it, to be honest, my truthful story is that I definitely was suicidal. I had gone to school and gone to college and worked, you know, they tell you to go to school, learn, get education, get a career, and to then be thrown in prison, I wanted to end it, and I literally made plans in order to do so, and it was easy for it to happen. But what then happened again from picking up the pen and praying was that I found that faith. However, it was easier to find the to get used to the environment and be like everybody else and argue with people and fight because it is an angry place. So for me, I would say prison needs to be looked into in the way that people are like supported and advised and whatever. We've got a lot of people in prison with so many mental health problems, like multiple disadvantages. You know, I remember being in jail, and the one thing that threw me off in the very beginning was the screams. You know, there is screams. I mean, I got to Holloway and I was like, what is this? Like, what is, like, why does that woman, I can never see them. They're behind the door. And I would ask who, you know, why do they keep screaming? And they'll be like, oh, don't worry, that's just the mad lady over there. You know, and I'm like, how could this be normal? If I was in my house and heard a woman screaming, I'm calling the police, like straight away, something's going on. I don't know what's happened. Let it be a party and she's just having a good time, then my mistake, but don't let it be that something's happened to that woman, that you're leaving them behind the door. So for me, I would say that if prison is going to work, because it doesn't work right now, there needs to be more than one officer that actually cares. More than one probation officer that actually cares, more people in social service that are like, actually, this child, we can save them. We don't have to lock them up. We have 12-year-olds in secure units right now, 12-year-olds. I'm meeting little boys that's like up to my hip, and they're telling me that if they're found guilty, their sentence is going to be 30 years or more. Now, my thing is that there's always an adult attached to these so-called crimes, and if we're going to lock up the children, why don't we find the bigger people that are involved in taking these children away from their homes, breaking that relationship, instead of then throwing this little 12-year-old boy in prison and somehow expecting him to look at society as a normal thing? Because for him, at 12 years old, he's been let down so much that he's had to go to a gang. He's had to go to strangers. And so then we throw them in prison. So for it to work, we're going to have to look at that, everything, mental health, you know, health, you know, house, that environment. I always look at employment, education, all of those things are being let down. And then we're throwing them into a prison where during COVID, children were not in school. And they said children have to be in school, but you have young offenders who were behind the door, no family visits, no nothing. So imagine how much they lost in that time. We need to create a place where people can actually get support, be heard, be seen, and not actually re-traumatized and re-tortured. And for me, I know that it's a very far road for that to happen, because unfortunately we've been working in this system so many years. I shouldn't have had to go to jail in order to come out and then try to fix things, because there was already people there before me. So why is it the people that go to prisons are the ones that are coming out and going, actually, we need to do something about this?
So I would say, in terms of the, you know, the theme of this festival is about dreaming and dreaming big dreams and dreaming on. And I think that the dream that I would like us as a society to think about is that, you know, what kind of society do we want to be part of? You know, what kind of society do we feel proud to say, this is my community, this is what I have taken responsibility for? And I think that we're quite a way away in this country towards that society, but it has to start with the first step. And at the end of the day, if there are people who do need to go into prison, what we should be thinking about is how do they come out at the other end better people, better neighbours, better citizens, better friends, And that should become the aim, and that's what we should be dreaming of, a world where we can do that.
Do you have anything, Junior?
So two words spring to mind, and I think that's forgiveness and not the forsaken. You know, when I think about those people and I'm thinking about the better world that we want, that's what we need. That's what we need more of.
Thank you. And I would, just picking up on what that Pierce said, which links to that, is that I want to say, if we're dreaming, rather than just dreaming about prisons, criminal justice system, what that would look like, it has to be in that big picture of exactly what sort of society and world do we want to live in. Because I do want to always hold together offenders, victims, recognising that many people are both. But actually it goes back to that. What will make for stronger communities and make for a strong society? So we can't dream in this realm unless we are also looking upstream. All those things we've talked about that lead to this situation where people are caught up in the criminal justice system. And therefore, what that then leads me to is, I guess if I was really dreaming, would I have prisons at all? Let's perhaps not go right to that end, but I would have prisons for a very small number of people, a very small number of people who genuinely do need to be kept locked away. I would then look at our mental health system. Pierre and I were recently in the Netherlands, where they've looked at how do we address people's addiction, where addiction and mental health underpins people offending. How do we look at that differently? So that would be my next thing. And then I'd want to say we need to be addressing these situations, consequences of offending within the community. I'd like to see more restorative justice happening within the community. If we were talking about the riots, I know we haven't got time to talk about that, but why are we sending people away from those communities rather than saying let's face up to the consequences in those communities? Yes, have community sentencing, look at good restorative justice situations where we have to be reflecting on the big picture. Women's centres, we know, work really well, where women are able to look at things holistically, work on anger, pattern changing, all the issues of addiction, parenting. We should be doing that for men and women. We should be doing that within our communities, where people are not hidden away, that it's there in our communities, and where we are equally valuing everyone. And perhaps that just links our dream. We talked about OBEs. We talked about how people label things. When people say, oh, you're a bishop with a title like Right Reverend Rachel Treweek, and I say in prisons, I am no more important than you are. We need a world where we all recognise we are unique individuals, creating the image of God. And yes, I have a particular role at this time. But if we really dreamt of a world where we believed in the value and dignity of every person, then I think that would begin to see my dream realised.
Shona. I just want to add that one thing I would also like to see if I was to dream was less women giving birth in prison, yes, and more
amen.
Children.
Amen, amen.
So that's a big thing for me.
Yes. I'm going to allow myself to answer this question,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, go for it.
Because actually this event is part of what I dream, which is that actually the public become involved in this discussion, not just when we have riots, not just, you know, when something happens on your doorstep, but actually every day. And that we create a country where the government are able to take the big, long-term, brave financial decisions that they will need to take in order to change the justice system. Because if we are going to stop using prison, which actually I am very far, I've moved over 12 years to a much more abolitionist perspective on all of this, but if we're going to do that, and actually many MPs will say, many government ministers will say, yeah, we know it's not working, but they're on a very short election cycle and they can't make these difficult decisions when they've got a public who are tough on crime and want more going on. So I would say we need to change. We need to be the change, yeah, in having these discussions, in talking to each other, in educating ourselves, so that we can allow those who hold the power to make the difficult decisions. Right, that's my bit. So obviously I'd like you all to do that, but my last question to each of our brilliant panelists is, if everyone here today says, well, what can I do to make a difference? What's the one thing? Can you all limit yourselves to just one thing that you would say, how about this? You can go in as soon as somebody's got something to say.
Okay, there's 100 of things, but I'll be really disciplined and go for one thing. If you haven't heard of the Welcome Directory, and if you're part of a faith community and you are not signed up to the Welcome Directory, why not? Go away and Google it. Do those three training sessions, get your faith community signed up, and you can welcome people when they come out of prison.
Thank you.
So I know this is a shameless plug, but as the chief exec of the Prison Reform Trust, I would say that, you know, go into our website, and it's a free download, so you don't have to pay anything, but we have our Bromley briefings, which gives you all the facts and all the figures and all the data and all the narrative around what is really going on in our prisons. Get curious about prisons, get informed about prisons, and if something really bugs you, go to your MP. Find out what your local prison is, if you have a prison in your local area and your community, and just take an interest.
Thank you. I would give a big plug to the Bromley briefings, actually. As an academic, I absolutely rely on them. They are
absolutely
fantastic.
Brilliant.
Data source.
They are brilliant.
So, yeah, they're your first port of call for prison related, well, punishment related information. Brenda.
Oh, okay. So I think Junior mentioned it earlier when he said about, you know, there's more of us like that have gone to jail and are doing, working our asses off to make sure that like other people are seen and heard. I would say like challenge those narratives of the media when they say that we all enjoy a prison and, you know, it's a walk in a park and it's a boot camp. It's not. And I can tell you right now that prison is just re-traumatizing people. So challenge that, because now you've met more people like us. And I, you know, follow me on social media. I'll show you all the artists I work with. They're all doing amazing work. They're fathers, they're mothers. And if you could see them, because one thing for me when I got out of jail was watching the news and being so angry because they spoke about an ex-offender, but I knew they weren't talking about me because that wasn't my story, and I knew it wasn't a lot of the people's stories that I met and I know today. So just challenge those articles, you know, don't read into like, oh, it's all a walk in the park. Like, challenge it and say, actually, hold on a minute, let's really talk about this, because I met Lady Unchained and she said, actually, you know, it's not, you know, like, challenge it at me if you want, I'll help you, I'll share, like, you know, share stuff, share those positive stories, and just maybe let's try to be less judgmental.
So when I walked in, I was filled with a bit of fear because seeing so many people, but also excitement, because I imagine that everyone's here because they're curious and they want to see change happen, and that's a massive thing. Here's what I want to say for all of you: if you're in an opportunity where you can help someone who's got a criminal record, who is just trying, like, lend them that hand, open that door. If you're a business, give them that chance. I can't tell you what a massive, massive difference it makes if somebody believes in you. I just cannot tell you, like, it is incredible when someone says to you, you know what, I'll give you a chance. And I see it all the time, and it can transform people's trajectories, just even the smallest things, in a massive, massive way. And if you know anyone who's inside, write to them, let them know they're loved, and let them know that there's a space for them when they come out. Again, it makes a massive difference.
Okay, well, that's our time up. I'd like to thank you so much for being such a responsive audience. Rachel and I have been to Greenbelt before, but the other three haven't, and I think you've given them a terrific welcome. I hope that it's been informative. Everybody is, I think, on various bits of social media, or their organisations are. You can look in the programme, and feel free to come and talk to any of us afterwards, and have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.